So I'm going to begin just reading the description of the Feast of Trumpets, and you don't need to turn to this. I'm just going to read this to you. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel, saying, in the seventh month of the first day, on the first day of the month, you shall have a Sabbath rest, a memorial of blowing of trumpets, a holy convocation. You shall do no customary work on it, and you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord." And we've read this before. We know this. This is why we're here. And this is why we relish in the reality that we do no customary work on this day. We come together and we enjoy our time with God. So jumping into my offertory message, I will start by telling you, but with a name, Gil Gilmore. This is not a name for any of you. It sounds like it could be a first baseman in American baseball or some other trade, part of life. But Gil is a 10-year-old boy from the Boulder area who's unique in many ways. He's very personable, and that's not necessarily unusual, quite frankly. But he is, however, selfless, and I'll explain why I know this. And that may be a rare quality, not just in a child, but in an adult, frankly. And we recently at my company had a memorial service that Gil and his mom attended at our company for one of the people who rode our paratransit buses. These are buses where we take people who need a little extra care, a little extra help to get to the doctor, or very often to work. And this person rode our paratransit buses for 19 years. And her name was Terry Liker, and she was a rider and an employee of our Boulder King Supers, which is a very beloved local store, even though it's a chain. And back in March of 2020, 10 people, I think you all know the story, were shot to death by a crazed gunman, probably someone who was very evilly and demonically motivated. But Terry was beloved by many, including our drivers who brought Terry to and from work each day. And we actually had several of our drivers at the memorial, including the one who brought her to work that very morning. And of course, as you can imagine, he is having a hard time getting past that. But Terry would have relished her time with him and would have him not feel bad about that. 9 others, of course, lost their lives in that horrible killing spree. A Boulder police officer with several young children ran into the store moments after the gunfire erupted and was, of course, murdered himself. The stories of the families impacted by this tragedy so touched young Gil Gilmore, that he decided to gather money that he had received for a recent birthday, and then he became motivated, and he found other ways to raise money just for himself that he could, and this was his plan, donate to the families of those who lost people in that massacre. Gil wanted to give the money to the families of those who lost people, mainly to try to see if he could help ease their pain. He understood that money wasn't the key, frankly, but I think inherently he understood that the action was one of love. And really, he has grown especially close to Terry Liker's mom and dad, who've spent some time at our building, and they're now kind of like grandparents to him. But the point is that Gil gave all he could to assist others. He gave it out of love and deep concern. And he basically gave all that he personally had, and he tried to really get money donated to him so he could give more. The money was of really little consequence to the families. I don't know if Gil understood that, but the statement of love and support was something that they really needed, and I suspect Gil needed once he learned of what happened, and they continue to need this. We are commanded to come before God on his appointed holy days with an offering of substance. As we all know, God does not need money or material things. Anything that is good in this world has been created by him in the very first place. What he does require for us, as we know, is our love, and with that love, our respect, our obedience, and our humility. Now, beginning in Deuteronomy, and I'm reading from the New King James Version, we're going to start in Deuteronomy 12, and in verse 11, we'll read again, Deuteronomy 12 and verse 11. Then there will be the place where the Lord your God chooses to make his name abide. There you shall bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, the heave offerings of your hand, and all your choice offerings which you vow to the Lord. All your choice offerings. We are to bring our offerings before God as he commands, but there's far more to the relationship with him. Once again, we know it's not about the money or in prior times about the lambs or anything that people would bring as they were commanded. We're going to touch on another scripture very quickly here. We're going to turn to 2 Corinthians. We're going to look at 2 Corinthians 9 and specifically in verse 7. And we read the following. Again, 2 Corinthians 9, verse 7. So let each one give as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loves a cheerful giver, and God is able to make all grace abound toward you, that you, always having all sufficiency in all things, may have an abundance for every good work. So again, here we see the flip side of our obedience and our love for God. He gives us the same very much, and I would say many, many times over. When we obey, when we love him, he gives us more than we could ever imagine. And that's often something that's very difficult for us to comprehend, especially, you know, certainly people who have not been called, people not in the church, would have a very difficult time understanding. They might understand the concept of tithing or giving. And as Mr. Harris said, it's on Sabbath. If you attend a service at another church, a mainstream church on a Sunday, you may hear a few things that resonate, some things that make sense. But then I recall from experience, I'd see the envelopes come out and really a pittance that would be given and put into the basket during the appointed time. Not something of substance, not something that shows God we understand our relationship with him and where from all good things flow. What struck me in meeting Gil Gilmore, this young 10-year-old boy with heart and spirit and compassion and empathy for all the people that he has interacted with, that he appeared wise beyond his years, as we sometimes note about a person, we sometimes say that. It was the cheerful and heartful way that he gave to the families. And that, I suspect, is how they began to have that relationship with him, not as someone who made the news because this young man gave to people, gave to the families, but he really developed a relationship with the people, with the families. And that's something that really wasn't covered by the news because it wasn't appropriate. And for Gil, that's what it was all about. He knew it was not much that he was raising and giving. For him, it was a lot. But somehow he knew that what was in his heart mattered far more to them. We know that is what matters to God about us, that we give substance and not the scraps. Again, think about that. Again, my example of the envelopes on Sunday that you throw into the basket or the coins, that it's not of substance, it's scraps. And it's almost like, why bother if that's how you care? That we give with our hearts full and not in shame because we know we can do better for him. Tuck under our offering under someone else because we know that it's not good enough. And I don't mean good enough in the eyes of other people. That's not the point. It's not the point that we're competing with others in terms of what we give. We should never be ashamed by that if we're giving from our heart to our means, something of substance to us. That we give substance and not the scraps. That we give with our hearts full and not in that shame, as I mentioned. He gives us all. God gives us everything that we have. And again, everything that is good in our lives, if we stay true to him, and we don't fall away and be lured away by this world and all that it distracts us with. We can do this. We can do the same in response to God. In responding to the scribes, and this is interesting. We're going to be touching in Mark 12 here, but I'll get to that in a second. In responding to the scribes who had asked Jesus what the greatest commandment was, Jesus responded by first quoting what's called the Shema, and this is in Hebrew, which we read in Deuteronomy 6. So we will be looking at Deuteronomy 6 here. You shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, all of your soul, all of your mind, and all of your strength. Again, we've heard that one. We've read this before. This is not news to us. But again, you shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, all of your soul, all of your mind, and all of your strength. Maybe at a later date we'll explore that concept of loving with your heart and your soul, because sometimes I think we get challenged by that. What does that mean? How can you love with your heart? We know what it means inherently, but being able to explain that even to ourselves can be challenging. Jesus said or responded that this is the first commandment, that you do love the Lord your God with all of your heart, all of your soul, all of your mind, and all of your strength. Jesus understood that, but he went further. And this is in Mark 12 and in verse 33. And the second is like it. Is this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these. And we can read how the scribes responded to Jesus, which I find very interesting. And again, this is now we're in, oh, I'm sorry, I'm in Mark 12 and verse 33. This is the scribes responding to Jesus. And to love him with all the heart, with all the understanding, with all the soul, and with all the strength, and to love one's neighbor as oneself is more than the whole burnt offerings and sacrifices. So that really encapsulated what Jesus was saying. When asked about the most important commandment, yes, to love God, and secondly, to love your neighbor, and that these were far more important than any burnt offerings or any offerings we can give. But in the meantime, we are commanded to bring forth our offering to show God we understand our relationship with him, with the respect that we give him by obeying his commandments. He does not ask much of us when you think about it. We know that God does not need our money. To him, it's monopoly money. It's funny money. And he has no meaning for it. It means nothing to him. And as we know, he told people in response, you do render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, but to God you give what is God's. But since it does have meaning to us in this life, we need to use money. We like to have nice things. And we can show him that we understand our relationship with him and our total reliance on him for all that we have, our lives, our health, our occupations, our school, you name it, our children, our parents. It's all because of God. Regardless of the challenges that we face in this life, we are deeply blessed by him. And in response, it should not be very hard to understand. We must obey and love him deeply. That is what he wants from us. And that is part and parcel of what we're doing today with our offering, is showing him that we love him